Welcome to Catherine Flynn's podcast, Intelligent Edge Yoga, conversations for smart, compassionate practice. Each episode will guide and inquire into ethics-based spirituality within a modern paradigm of practice. Whether your practice is yoga, Ayurveda, meditation, or simply living a life full of intention, this is for you. I'd like you to take a moment to consider supporting this podcast through Patreon. Your pledges enable the continuation of the podcast. Patrons will also receive exclusive resources, behind-the-scenes material for instructors, guided yoga and meditation sessions for yogis, and everything in between. This is just the start of something new and exciting. You can be a part of it by going to patreon.com/intelligentedgeyoga and clicking on the large orange button. Thanks.
Welcome to Intelligent Edge Yoga, yoga conversations for smart, compassionate practice with Catherine Ann Flynn. I'm Catherine. Hi, yogis. I'm recording this update about 2 years after this podcast was initially recorded because I realized that I forgot to add a biography to the front of our conversation. And you'll also hear that I open with really high, loud intensity, and it was just a bit much to begin with. And so I thought I would ease you into it. So get prepared for some anxious nerves, high-pitched Catherine Flynn voice. So at the time, it was a surprise that Tiffany said yes to doing the podcast because I think I'd recorded all of 3 episodes. And as I mentioned in the write-up, Tiffany Cruikshank's kind of a big deal. She's really well known on the international circuit, and I've seen her at more yoga conferences than I can count. She's been on piles of magazine covers and published in many, many magazines. But she's also the founder of Yoga Medicine, which is the name of her teacher training curriculum and program. And she's been teaching for over 25 years, including work in yoga as well as traditional Chinese medicine, because she has a master's in acupuncture. And so for a period of time, she was actually the acupuncturist and yoga teacher at the Nike World headquarters. So that's interesting. I'm going to let her tell the rest of it, but just prepare yourself for some loud, excited Catherine. Don't worry, I calm down in a moment. Enjoy. Thank you so much for doing this. I was just really, I thought, you know what, I'm going to put it out there and I'll see what happens. And then I was so, so pleasantly surprised.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I love talking about all this stuff. You have great questions. So I'm definitely happy to see it.
Oh, good. I'm so pleased. So I know you know quite a bit about you. And and just for my listeners who maybe have seen your name or know something about you, I'm going to round it out for them.
Cool.
So I'm so, so pleased. The person I'm so excited to be talking with today is Tiffany Cruikshank, and she is a yoga teacher and doctor of traditional Chinese medicine who started practicing at a young age and fell in love with holistic medicine simultaneously to yoga. She's been teaching for 20 years and is often the feature faculty at international studios and conferences, including the Toronto Yoga Conference this April. She apprenticed with an acupuncturist during her college years while doing a bachelor's in medicinal plant biology and a master's in acupuncture and oriental medicine with a specialty in sports medicine and orthopedics. Tiffany was the acupuncture specialist at Nike headquarters in Portland, Oregon, while seeking a yoga teaching job there, and ultimately stayed for over 4 years and oversaw a team of acupuncturists who served 10,000 employees. She continues to teach internationally under the umbrella of her yoga medicine trainings, offering 2, 3, and 500-hour certifications in her blend of TCM and yoga. She is also dog mom to the photogenic and portable Lulu the dog. And I just listened to your podcast with Jay Brown and found out that you're also doing some parenting with your partner who has children.
Yes, I have inherited teenagers.
Oh goodness. You got in at a good time, a time where I'm sure your experiences of being having some troubles as a teen
and trying to seek a path out of those troubles. I'm sure that that's really helpful in relating to them.
It is tricky to be an onlooker, right? I mean, even, you know, as a biological parent, you know, you're kind of an observer to it all, I imagine. So it's hard. You can't do it for them. And gosh, I mean, I wouldn't want to go back and do it again.
No. I mean, we really do glorify youth, but I just feel like I keep getting more skillful the older I get and the less I suffer.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I feel like in my profession, and, you know, I started practicing Chinese medicine and teaching yoga pretty young. I've always really valued getting older. I remember turning 30 and wishing I was turning 40, and which is silly because obviously you need to appreciate the age you are. But I've always been younger than everyone, so I've always really valued getting older and wiser. And I love it. So
yes, and especially I think in this. This realm that we work within, the yoga realm, you know, I'm not someone who says that there are too many yoga teacher trainings. I look at it as an elevating of the yoga palette. And so because there are now a lot of 200-hour trainings, we've developed enough people who have a palette for even more elevated trainings. Mm. But yeah, lots of people come to it now at 20 and they're teachers at 20 and... I probably wouldn't have taken my life advice at 20.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I started teaching at 16 though, too. And I think mainly just because there weren't really any, you know, studios or classes when I moved off to college at, you know, 16 and there weren't any classes or studios there. So I mainly just did it out of the need. And, yeah, there's a lot of pressure teaching at that age, and rightfully so. I mean, obviously we have life experience at 16, but it's much less than, you know, as we've lived a few decades or so. So
yes, I'm sure it was abundant enthusiasm. You were probably very optimistic.
It was fun, and I was surprised at how many people showed up. I taught one of my first classes was at an armory center, and, you know, rented a little space, and I had 20 some, I think they were all women, probably in their 30s or 40s, show up, and it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yes. Middle-aged women have always been very patient with me as a teacher. So I wanted you've done a couple podcasts recently, the Jay Brown one, which really dug into your history, and also Andrea Ferretti last year about TCM and springtime care. And I wanted to ask you about, you know, what got you into traditional Chinese medicine, especially because it was interesting to hear you say to Andrea that that Ayurveda is similar, but aside from some broad strokes about harmony with nature, subtle anatomy, and energy conservation, they really are two distinct systems. So I wanted to know what drew you to TCM. And now that Ayurveda is growing more popular, do you ever feel any pressure to keep couching things within yoga's sister science?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, they're definitely very distinct systems. There's, I think, just overlaps in a lot of holistic medicine. And you can always find similarities and dissimilarities, I think, really, in anything. It's the beauty of, like, the web of life. You know, when I was a teenager and really struggling, I, you know, got through my high school really early and, you know, finished a couple of years early and went off to college hoping to kind of like find something really interesting to study, you know, hoping to get into this holistic medicine thing that I was so intrigued with. And finding out, you know, you've got all the prereqs and gen ed and all this stuff, you know, college really, for me, didn't, you know, dig into the deep stuff that I wanted to look at. And so, you know, I found myself really digging into different, you know, styles of medicine. And I actually did look at Ayurveda. I did my teacher training. And, you know, when I did my teacher training, I got really excited about Ayurveda. And I looked at just kind of skipping college and going into Ayurveda because there weren't any prereqs at that time. I'm not sure what it is now, but and then I just said my parents were very uneasy about that. And I kind of dug in and decided, you know, I really wanted to keep going and get my undergrad. And, you know, I think one of the main one of the main things that led me to choose TCM at the time was partly just because, you know, the Ayurveda really wasn't regulated, and I really wanted to make a career of seeing patients. And you know, I think Ayurveda is still, unfortunately, a bit behind Chinese medicine in that sense of having a medical license and malpractice, unfortunately, because it's such a great art and science. And but I mean, that was part of what led to it. And then I also started apprenticing with an acupuncturist and just kind of fell in love with the Chinese medicine side. Who knows? I mean, if there had been more regulation on it, I might have gone the Ayurvedic side. I am glad I did my undergrad and my pre-med stuff. Obviously, it's so funny nowadays. College is such a funny thing. The loans are so expensive, but, you know, the practical experience is really limited, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah.
So
I'm up in Canada, and so we have a little bit of a different system. We are more affordable. That's for certain. So your American listeners should come to Canada for cheaper college. But there is definitely a trend that I imagine is in the States as well, of really wanting to know what the return on investment is with university these days.
Yeah.
So a conversation I didn't have.
I mean, I feel like, you know, back when I went to college, it was just like every, you know, you go and you get your undergrad, and I'm glad. I think it's great that millennials are thinking about that and really looking at, you know, where are they putting their time and their money and investing wisely. And, you know, I think back to your second question is like, I think Ayurveda is great. I personally just have so much experience in the TCM side now that it makes more sense for me to stick with that. And I don't like to try and dabble in things that I don't know well. I definitely love Ayurveda and have a lot of respect for it. And I think, you know, either one can be used really well with the yoga practice. It's just, I think, important that you get to know something really well and stick with that. We kind of have a tendency in our modern day society to like do everything all at once and to try and incorporate everything. But I think there is a benefit to kind of like really digging deep in something and still incorporating other ideas, being open to it.
Yes. Yeah. Mastery takes time. And I think, I agree. I think sometimes yoga teachers feel the pressure to be everything to everyone. And certainly, you know, lots of us teach in communities where we have diverse studentship coming to us. And so we do need to broaden our toolkit. At the same time, I agree with you, digging deep rather than spreading yourself super thin.
And I don't think there's one that's right. I mean, I think obviously Ayurveda is really entwined with the yoga practice, so it does kind of make sense to really add that in. And I love that perspective. You know, but I think both have a lot of correlations. So finding one that feels like it makes sense to you, I think, is the important thing.
Ayurveda makes a lot of sense to me. And obviously my teachers were interested in it, which inspired me to go have more training in it. But whenever I do Ayurveda presentations, I have an opening slide because I find the yoga world is really, really high on inspirational quotations, but the Ayurvedic world is somewhat impoverished in the inspiration. And so I have this opening slide that with a quotation from Dr. Robert Svoboda that says, "Live with reality or reality will come to live with you." And it sounds threatening.
No, I love it.
But you mentioned that in another interview that TCM has a concept where your life force is limited. And when it expires, that's the end of your life. Ayurveda has a similar concept with the vital essence of ojas. And I've always found that some of the wisdom in deeper yoga and Ayurvedic teachings really run counter to this sort of new age spirituality, it's all good vibes that kind of follow mainstream yoga around. And so I wanted to know, do you ever feel like you're being a bit of a bummer when you go into deeper teaching?
Well, I think it's more of a reality check too. I think being positive, you know, is really beneficial. We see that a lot in, you know, just our study of the brain and you know, how that translates into our experience. But, you know, I think it's a good reminder just to be conscious to how we live, how we direct and use our energy, that, you know, time is precious, life is precious. you know, it teaches us that sense of appreciation that I think is really important. So yeah, I think you could look at any one of them as negative or positive. And I think it's easy for anyone who comes out of holistic medicine school, whether that's Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, naturopathic medicine, you kind of leave with this feeling you're so aware of all of the negative things around you. I know for me and a lot of my friends who graduated as well, you know, at the time it was like, there was like this recovery process of like, detoxifying a little bit of all of that information and allowing yourself to, you know, be human and experience, because there is, you know, importance in all of it. And if we're lucky enough to live long enough and, you know, we get to really appreciate all of the evolution of what it is to be a human and grow and change and get older and, you know, wrinkle and age. And, you know, I think all of these things are beautiful things. And it's a reminder that it's not a negative experience, even, you know, our limitation of life force, no one's going to live forever. And that's just a reality. And, you know, it's our reminder just to tune in and really appreciate, you know, what we have.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. A reality check. It doesn't need to be depressing. It just is.
Yeah.
So you've spoken about how Ayurveda links the elements to personality and traditional Chinese medicine is more about observation. And it's one of the challenges of teaching Ayurveda because people really like dosha tests, the tests where they, 10 questions to tell you all about yourself. And my teachers really don't like these. They really resist them. And they want people to cultivate observational skills rather than saying, you know, okay, I did a 10-question quiz on Chopra.com, and so I'm going to eat cucumbers now because I'm pitta, and that's it. Mm. So could you talk a little bit about TCM and practices based on, you know, on preference or, you know, internet prescription?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two sides to this. One is, you know, if you are an Ayurvedic practitioner or Chinese medicine, like there's work with patients, which is really specific and much more complicated, as I'm sure you'd agree. You know, it can be very kind of specific and you know, most people do have tendencies towards certain dysfunctions. So it simplifies things to focus on that. But health, you know, health and wellness, when we're talking about in a yoga setting or a group setting, you know, is more than that. It's like a bigger picture. And I really think self-awareness is key. It's why I wrote the books that I wrote was really to give my patients and students resources for self-care, which is, you know, really health and wellness is just that. It's self-care. No one can tell you how to refine your health. All of these are guidances and really into our own experience so that we ourselves as the patient can navigate what's most helpful. And yeah, I think it's hard on the internet because you do have to simplify things. You do have to make, you know, these general statements that are helpful to a lot of people. You know, I have to do that a lot in articles. You, mm-hmm. you know, you generalize, but you know, hopefully from your experience that it does, there are things that you've seen that do work, for the overarching, you know, broad spectrum of people reading it. And I think, you know, that's probably, I'm assuming where a lot of those tests came from was just, you know, hopefully to point a deeper and personal investigation inward. Unfortunately, it ends up being, you know, like a lot of the things we saw on the internet to this, you know, leading us down the rabbit hole of things that, you know, may or may not be completely helpful. You know, there's advice on everything nowadays. It's hard. Yes. And this is why I think yoga, I always say yoga is like the foundation of all healthcare, is that self-awareness. You know, I'm the only one that can really tell what's helpful. You know, as far as health and wellness goes, when it comes to, you know, a lot of where I see Western medicine is really, you know, keeping us alive. Like there's tests and, you know, all these things that we can do to monitor that. And then, you know, that's a little bit more obvious, but when it comes to health and wellness, really I'm the only person that knows. And even, you know, nowadays we see a lot of studies on tests and labs and things like that don't match up with the experience that the patient's having. And so, you know, when it comes to health and wellness, what's more important, the labs and the test or my subjective experience? And, you know, most of the time it's subjective experience trumps that, you know, minus a few exceptions. and so, you know, yoga is this pointing inward. And I think, you know, whatever you practice that, I hope to, and I'm sure it sounds like you and your teacher as well, to point people into that experience to guide themselves, which is really the greatest resource they can have.
And I think that's a really, responsible approach, as both a doctor of TCM or an Ayurvedic practitioner, but also as a yoga teacher, to empower people and to give them the information, to be their own healers. You know, with allopathic medicine there for when things really go sideways.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a place for everything, really. It's just a matter as a patient and a student of navigating what's most helpful. And, you know, I think we get to the point a lot of times in Western medicine, you know, doctors, Western medical providers, you know, they want to help. They go to medicine as a way to help people, really. And so, you know, when people come in with things that maybe are more wellness oriented, you know, they try and help, you know, they try and do the best they can. And unfortunately, the limitations of our medical system, and I'm assuming this is fairly similar in Canada as well, is our lack of connection sometimes, which, you know, is a much bigger and a harder solution, not a simple solution. And one of the reasons why I created yoga medicine was to bridge that gap between yoga and healthcare, and that there is a place for everything. Of course, you know, we need it all. We can't say that any one way is wrong or not good, because they all have a place.
Yes. Yeah. So you mentioned that you've written a few books, and I wanted to ask you about one, because you've written a recent book entitled Meditate Your Weight, a 21-day retreat to optimize your metabolism and feel great. And so you've got this TCM education that you share, but you're also, I mean, you're a figurehead in the yoga industry. I was assisting Elena Brower at the Yoga Journal conference several years ago. Well, a couple years ago. And anyway, I saw you and Catherine Buttig just having like a friendly powwow in a hallway. And I had a fangirl moment. I was like, oh my gosh, they're on my computer most of the time. And now there they are. So you know, you're recognizable, and everyone in the industry knows that the practice is about introversion and about, you know, cultivating a functional practice rather than a practice that's about form. But we're also in a capitalist system. And so women are super marketed to with really clear prescriptions as to how they should look. And so I was curious because, and I could be totally wrong, but you look to me like someone who's maybe been slim their whole life. And so why would you be inspired to write this book?
Well, first off, I definitely have my own struggles. We all do. And actually obesity runs in my family. So it's definitely something that most of my family members have struggled with. So, I mean, it is something close to me, but really, I mean, the book was meant to be a follow-up to my first book, Optimal Health for a Vibrant Life, which was, you know, really created as a way to give resources to my patients and my students, really looking at nutrition, yoga, lifestyle stuff, all these things to optimize our own health, really, as a resource. And then the follow-up was really meant to look at the mental side of things. You know, with my publisher, I did the book with Random House, and, you know, they really wanted to pitch to this weight loss community. At first I was really resistant. You know, I didn't want to give into that. And I kind of sat with it for a while and really thought, you know, how wonderful would it be? Like there's so much self-love and body image stuff now, not as much at the time, but you know, it was kind of starting at the time in the yoga world. Well, I could get on this bandwagon and join that, or I could, you know, get this to people who don't get to hear these things, get this message out to the women looking for weight loss strategies and ending up feeling really empty and unfulfilled and, you know, bouncing back and forth. My mom spent her whole life, you know, bouncing from diet to diet and struggling with her weight. And, you know, her mother died of complication of obesity at a pretty young age. And so, you know, I really wanted to give not only the kind of self-love, but also these tools to these women who aren't getting it that could change their habits for a lifetime. It wasn't about, you know, fasting or doing extreme things as much as learning how to make peace with their bodies, learning how to change their patterns on a lifetime spectrum rather than a 1 month spectrum, which was, you know, my first book was a 30-day detox to kind of clearing out toxins and optimizing your health. And really what I found was that, you know, we were living in an age where people have so much information at their fingertips about, you know, what they should do and how they should exercise. And I had so many patients who came in who, you know, were doing all the right things, who, you know, ate pretty well and exercised and did yoga, but were still really struggling with, you know, not necessarily just body weight, but health issues. And, you know, I found in my own experience that the mental side of things was such a huge component, you know, just simple things like looking at how they treat themselves, looking at how they, you know, their belief that they deserve to be healthy, their, you know, connection to themselves and their communities and, you know, why they eat and how they eat and, you know, just the little things that I found were so important. So, yeah, I mean, it could have been probably a different title, but I'm really happy that, you know, we hit the people who, you know, are out there looking for some kind of weight loss and end up finding something really significant and hopefully life changing.
Yeah, so it was a loving bait and switch.
Yes, basically. Yeah.
I respect that. I often say to my students, particularly in teacher training settings where, you know, sometimes they almost get excited that now we can all get together and talk about how, you know, we're sort of the gatekeepers to the real yoga and all those mm-hmm. other people, they're practicing the bad yoga or the fake yoga. And... you know, if there was a standard, if there were prerequisite beliefs to get into yoga classes, I would not have made the cut. I would have been fired from yoga early on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the mental side was such a big part of it. And I know, you know, when the book first came out, I definitely got some pushback from, you know, some people in the yoga community because, you know, it was a weight loss book. And I was just like, hey, read the book. Like, yeah. You got to read it because we're all saying the same thing. You know, it's about self-love. It's about acceptance and about learning to be healthy because you love yourself, not because you need to lose weight. Because those are the habits that, you know, last a lifetime, not this desire, this weight loss coming from an inadequacy, like, you know, a lack, but coming from an abundance, really, of wanting to be healthy and wanting to feel better and caring, self-care.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, you can't deny that that's part of the reason that people are coming. And and who are we to tell them that that's a bad reason? Here are the reasons you should have.
Yeah. And rightfully so. I mean, in the medical world, like, you know, obesity is one of the top predisposing factors to almost every disease. So there is a real place for that, you know, I think within our healthcare system. I think, you know, there's a place for everything, but trying to brutalize yourself, you know, works for some people, but it doesn't often work long term. So, yeah. And I think the yoga message is, you know, learning to make peace with it. So, yeah.
Cool. So I want to talk to you a little bit about teaching, because I'm quite passionate about teaching and teaching methods. But before we move on, I wanted to ask, because most of my listeners so far are Canadian, and have you been up here other than to BC? BC doesn't count.
Where have I been? I think I was in Ontario.
Okay, that's where I am.
Yeah. Was it Ontario? Yes. I think it was Ontario. So I've lost track a little.
It's but I have freezing here.
Yeah. Ontario, Vancouver, Toronto. You know,
okay. Yeah. All the big ones. So I'm originally from Toronto, but I live in Ottawa, which is Canada's capital. And it's just winter forever. Like it's so cold here. It was, we're in Celsius. So it's been like minus 25 recently. And so I wanted to ask you, I know, try and imagine that. And what would be some TCM and yoga medicine practices for cultivating wellness in extreme cold?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I've never, I live in Seattle, we all just complain about the rain. And I think New York City is the coldest place I've lived in, which, you know, I think the wind was really the worst there. But yeah, so I've never personally experienced extreme cold. But, you know, in Chinese medicine, in particular, you know, nutrition is a big part of it. You know, we always talk about really avoiding raw foods and really going for, you know, cooked foods and soups, you know, all the things you're kind of naturally drawn to, spices, but not too much. Really, the reality is that, you know, you can overdo anything. And in yoga practices, you know, just simple things to stimulate circulation without irritating the body. Obviously, every person's body is going to be very different. You know, a little bit of warmth is good, but I think the trick is not losing too many fluids. People really love the hot yoga and I think some of that's fine, saunas and things and hot yoga, I think in moderation. In Chinese medicine, you know, the fluids are the yin, this really precious substance that we're so prone to depletion of in our modern day busy lives. And so there's a preciousness to the fluids in Chinese medicine of doing a little bit of those, you know, saunas and things to get you to sweat lightly, but without losing too many fluids. And as we know, in a Western sense, you know, we lose electrolytes and minerals and things too with that are harder to replace. We can, you know, try and replace them through foods and or drinks or things, but, you know, and the obvious things, Kapalabhati, sun salutes, movements, you know, but I think it's also a really good time to take advantage of the winter time, which is really meant to be an introspective time, a time to cultivate yin. And, you know, people who are really deficient in yin is, you know, is really the counterbalance to our busy modern lives. It's, you know, about introspection and stillness and quiet. And, you know, now we learn more and more in Western medicine how important the parasympathetic tone is. And it's really about that parasympathetic tone and taking time, you know, the value of more restorative practices. And in Chinese medicine, winter is a really good time to cultivate that and find a balance. Obviously, winter, you need some movement to stay warm and to resist the cold outside, but also to cultivate this introspective practice is a really important thing. But, you know, it really depends on the individual, I think. In my opinion, it's always about the individual. There's some people who will still have heat in the wintertime, you know, who need different practices. So it really does come back to different things for different people.
Ottawa loves hot yoga because of the temperature. And I'm always fascinated because I teach in the hot room and about half my classes are in the hot room. And I'm always fascinated back to dosha and constitution, how I can go to one person in the room and they're pouring buckets of sweat 20 minutes into class. And at the end of class, the person right next to them is bone dry.
yeah it, I mean that's the individuality of it. And you know, in Chinese medicine we'd say that, you know, people with internal heat tend to sweat a lot, and you know, over time that can turn into a yin deficiency, a lack of fluids. Obviously that's not necessarily lining up with the Western idea of heat and fluids. It's a little bit more specific to the Chinese medicine side. But, you know, it's interesting too, because yin deficiency usually goes along with, you know, people who are working a lot and are kind of type A mentality, and that kind of burnout suggested with that. And a lot of times those hot classes, and in my experience, and I have never personally really taught hot yoga really, but I have taught at, when early on in my teaching days, taught at a hot yoga studio and watched, you know, it really tends to draw, you know, the people who are those type A people, you know, and yeah. Again, moderation and everything I think is good. It, you know, it's like homeopathic, like a little bit stimulates the system. You know, even if you do have heat or yin deficiency, I mean, these probably are new terms to a lot of people, but, a little bit is always good. It's just, you know, I think looking at, what our body needs and what's really helpful, probably a longer conversation. But
Yeah, I agree with you. And I warn teacher trainees who have a little bit of heat to their personality as well, because the way I am when I teach in the hot room is very different than when I teach in a room temperature room. Not just because I'm conscious of the fact that it's a very hot room, and so my sequencing needs to adjust for that. But you know, when my temperature rises, my mental heat rises as well. And so I can be a little, I guess, a little more stern, you might say. And of course, those people in the room, they have their heat too. So, you know, it's, you have to be careful or it's combustion.
Yeah.
So speaking of teaching, I wanted to talk to you about your trainings, because in preparation for this conversation, I was going through all of them, and you have three levels of training that you offer now. And they all have a strong focus on anatomy, but that's really anatomy now. It's a super broad term, and it doesn't really tell us much about your methods, you know, specifically what are you teaching about anatomy. And so I wanted to hear a little bit about the content of your courses and what drew you to grow it into three levels of certification.
Yeah. So, I mean, it started out with the 200 and the 500 as, you know, kind of being kind of in compliance with the Yoga Alliance. When I first started working with teachers, I actually just did them out of my house, and it was just out of a need. Like, there were no teacher trainings in our area, and, you know, a lot of teachers hadn't really done trainings at the time, and I just wanted to kind of share my knowledge, you know, that I'd extracted from trainings I had done, as well as my own experience with the local teachers. And I just used to run, you know, kind of workshops for teachers out of my house. And when I started running these kind of full blown teacher trainings, it was, you know, more in alignment with what the Yoga Alliance had. So, you know, for me, the 200 hour is really just learning how to teach. You know, there's so much that goes into that, you know, obviously alignment and anatomy basics, and then, you know, how to conduct a class and lead it, and you know, the talking part and the public speaking part and the business and just all the basics. And then the 500 hours really about learning more therapeutic foundations. Our 1,000 hour is really, you know, deeper studies, more therapeutic. And really the idea is just that, you know, it's just the beginning. You know, we're meant to continue to study this for the rest of our lives. And, you know, I hope our teachers will study with many other teachers as well. But the, you know, it's something that continues. There's not an end point. It's not like we're rushing to get the 1,000 hour, the 500 hour, but just to kind of have something to show, you know, when they have completed that as a marker, really. But it's not really about that at all. And yeah, I mean, ours is really deep in anatomy. It really is about kind of, you know, what we do at Yoga Medicine is really fusing the East and the West. So, you know, bringing in Eastern traditions, yoga and TCM and a little bit of Ayurveda, and, you know, fusing it with anatomy and physiology and kinesiology. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, when we look at this, you know, you teach all of these things and you get to the steps, but you realize the more that we study, the more we realize it's all the same, you know, like anatomy. We now start to realize, like, they're not, are they really separate muscles, or is that just because we're cutting them open? We lead dissections in our 500 in our advanced training, cadaver dissections. And it's always really fun to see the teachers show up and be like, wow, it's all the same. It actually all works together. You know, but you have to create a foundation. If we were just to start there and say, it's all one, you know, like, it wouldn't make any sense. So, you know, we have to kind of learn the foundations and then just continue to dig deeper and realize along the way that, you know, there's always questions. You know, life is a process of continuing to reflect and dig deeper. And, you know, one thing I hope to transmit to our teachers is that to give them a foundation to really think for themselves, so that, you know, regardless of their, you know, their inclination toward different styles or other methods, that they can really kind of help to discern what might be helpful for different students. Because I think that, you know, every style has a place and every teaching has a place. So yeah, that's kind of a quick summary of a little bit about us.
I'm curious, if you've ever felt this pressure, because I've recently developed a 300 hour curriculum, and I found it quite freeing, because until I had that in place, whenever I was running a 200 hour, I would feel like, you know, this is all we've got together. So I need to tell you everything I know, which is, of course, ridiculous, because, you know, I've had the amount of time to percolate and learn from other people and try things and synthesize it. But did you ever feel that pressure to transmit all you've got?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt the same way. You know, I remember running my first 200 hour and feeling that sense. I think over the years, like everyone, you know, our teachings change a little bit. And now, you know, we have other teachers and doctors and people contributing, which is nice for me to be able to sit back and not have to have all the answers to everything. Cause you know, obviously my knowledge is limited as well. And, you know, yoga medicine was never meant to be just about, you know, my knowledge, but really about, you know, connecting and getting people talking in a way that's really open-minded and embracing all these different styles. I think one of the downfalls sometimes to the yoga world is this the dogma sometimes of like this being like the one way, the only way. Mm-hmm. And as a healthcare provider, I just don't think that's realistic. So, you know, I love how yoga medicine has grown and having our teachers contribute more, you know, people who have studied and have some awareness, whether they're doctors or yoga teachers or people who've done our trainings or, you know, whatnot, is to get other people sharing their experience, because each one of us is limited by only being able to have the experience of our lifetime. And, you know, if we can draw on other people's experience, I think that's a really valuable resource. And to, you know, to try it out, you know, obviously, I don't think there's just one way, but you know, if you can kind of learn from someone else and then try it out and see what's helpful, you know, that's, I think, really the best way to figure out for yourself.
Yeah. I'm curious also about who's doing your training and who are they facilitating for? Because I'm asking because I've been listening to a number of yoga podcasts lately. And I'm hearing a lot about, you know, where well-known teachers are coming from and essentially the history of Ashtanga in the United States, you know, specifically New York and LA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their journeys, your journey, it doesn't always resonate with current teachers. Mm-hmm. In smaller communities. You know, we had my teacher from Go was always very, you know, yoga is skill in action, which means, you know, you apply certain practices for certain times and it's not one way. And we're teaching in diverse communities. So is that who you're seeing in your training? And how do you help prepare them for their diverse communities?
Yeah, I mean, we get a pretty broad variety of people coming in. You know, people from full-time yoga teachers to people who teach a little bit to doctors and healthcare providers who want to use it with their patients. You know, I think the continuous theme for us is really just anyone practicing to feel better, which is what I believe therapeutics is. It's, you know, we kind of oftentimes think of therapeutics as more of like restorative yoga practices or very simple practices. But you know, to me, therapeutics is practicing with a purpose, you know, whether, you know, for some people that might be more movement-based practices, and for others that might be more restorative or yin, whether there's injuries or limitations or it's just for overall health. You know, we really work with individuals who want to help people feel better, and not the sense of, I feel like sometimes in the yoga world as teachers, we kind of get this feeling of like having to teach certain poses or having to put in a certain number of vinyasas or arm balances. And I think that's great. You know, some people really want to come to yoga and get a workout, and mm-hmm. to each his own. I've been there. I think our teachers, the one continuous theme is that our teachers really want to help people feel better and to meet them where they're at, that there is really, you know, our teachers tend to be pretty open-minded and in recognizing that there is something different for everyone. So our teachers teach hot yoga or Ashtanga or restorative or yin. There's really no judgment, but, just to teach them to apply it in their own way. You know, so there is a pretty broad spectrum of people drawn to us. And a continuous theme, I guess, is just not going through the motions, but really, you know, purposeful yoga and getting people to reflect and have this self-inquiry within that.
I feel like I attract curious students, and I love that.
Yeah, we definitely have that. I was at a continuing education this last week and there were hardly any questions. And I was like, oh my gosh, like ours, I have to be like, okay, we have to have the question basket and I'll loop them in when it's relevant. Cause we have such curious teachers, like they want to know everything. And I'm just, you know, there's, obviously you've got to follow a train of thought and kind of stay on track. Otherwise you won't get through the information. But I love it. I love that our teachers are thinking and curious, and, you know, I love the questions. It's great.
Yeah, I've spent time with teachers and in training where, you know, you put your question in the basket or you raise your hand for the microphone during the dedicated question time. And that's not a challenge I have right now in my teaching career. And I wanted to ask, because many of my listeners teach yoga in this community and in their communities. And I think that they might feel like at your level, like you've got it made in the shade, like it's easy now. And I wanted to ask if there are any challenges that you face that feel the same from the beginning of your career. And what are the challenges of teaching at the level you do that, you know, we might not be able to see from the outside?
That's a great question. You know, I think the answer is pretty simple. Like, I think it's really all the same. You know, I think there was a time where I thought, oh, yeah, I'm getting past this. It's getting so much easier. But I don't know. I think the struggles we face, you know, are the same in different shapes. You know, being busy, keeping up, finding balance in our lives, you know, in a class, like sticking to the time frame, you know, making sure, you know, that you're meeting all the different students' needs of, you know, some people just want to be in their bodies, some people want to learn, you know, everyone needs different things in a group class. It's almost impossible to teach a class that's perfect for everyone. It is impossible to teach a class that's perfect for everyone. I don't know. I think the more after teaching for, I don't know, 22 years or something now, I think it all feels the same. Like it just comes back in a different shape. But I think it's the same. Maybe we start to feel more comfortable in certain scenarios, but then, you know, we expand it and are teaching different demographics or, you know, maybe larger classes, and it's the same. It's the same thing again and again. And I think we all go through the ups and downs of feeling comfortable and confident and then questioning. And I think the questioning is such an important place. I mean, for me, I question myself and what I do all the time, and it keeps me moving forward. It keeps me, you know, continuing to evolve as a teacher, as a student. I think for me, it's always just a reminder that, like, it's a good place. It feels uncomfortable a lot of times, you know, in the beginning, but if I can just be like, okay, this is good. The ability to be comfortable and stretch my boundaries, I think is a really just a big part of life, regardless of whether you care about teaching bigger classes or different classes, you know, it is life.
Yeah. One of my key takeaways and things that I always remind myself from the Bhagavad Gita is that as soon as you think your work is done, your work is beginning.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I always say to myself, like, I love our teachers. I love seeing, like, the diversity, and especially in a 200-hour training, like, you know, you never really know what teachers are going to be like. The only thing that really scares me is when there are teachers who, like, feel like they've got it all.
You know, interesting. Like
that's when you need
confidence is actually, you know, a red flag.
Yeah, not necessarily confidence, but, you know, as soon as we feel like we've got it all, we close ourselves to learning more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in any one even small subject, you could probably study for the rest of your life and not know all the answers. You know, there's so much information in the world nowadays. So, yeah.
I'm so glad you brought up studentship, because I have noticed that the people I'm attracted to are eternal students and quite committed to their studentship, know who their teachers are ready to give credit to them and to share around their knowledge. And so I wanted to ask you a little bit about your practices right now. And I wanted to know what's your current favorite practice that you don't teach? Because, you know, there's so much that we do that we don't teach. And also to know if you talk to your trainees about the difference between personal practice and teaching practice.
Yeah, well, we definitely talk to our trainees about that. I think, you know, it's important to have your own personal practice because, you know, teaching is is very different from that. It's more outward and less inward. And, you know, ideally the personal practice is an internal exploration. I don't know. I mean, I think I do teach a lot of it. I guess maybe the answer is restorative. I don't teach full restorative classes, and I do love restorative and, practice it often. I've just started teaching as part of my loco classes, one restorative pose at the end of each class for the past 6 months or so. And people love it. I think it's the one thing that's overlooked, you know, and so valuable in our modern day lives that really anyone could benefit from. That it's hard, and it's hard though. You know, I think people value going to a vinyasa class or a hot class, like they feel it, like they're doing something. And even though you really feel the effects of it, a restorative practice, sometimes it's harder to motivate yourself to get out and and be still, you know? Yeah. So,
If I'm honest, my favorite place to practice restorative yoga is on my bed with pillows.
I know. And I love it at home. That's why I think, you know, the online classes are such a great resource, and restorative is so simple that, you know, even if you just find one or two poses that you really like, that really work for you, I think, you know, making an intimate relationship with one or two of those poses is really beneficial because your nervous system really gravitates toward that. You can sink in a little deeper, you know, even if it's just a supported Shavasana for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes or, you know, some other pose. I think one of the brilliant things about restorative is finding a pose that is kind of welcoming to you at first and then expanding that into other poses potentially as well.
Can I ask what the restorative pose is that you've been teaching? Is it a supportive Shavasana?
Well, it's not always the same one, but it does differ depending on what I'm teaching. But I love, supported Shavasana, teaching people how to support themselves really well so they can relax is a good go-to. Cool.
You've talked before about how emotions manifest as illness. And emotional management can be a cornerstone of our yoga and wellness. Could you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, in TCM, in Chinese medicine, there's a lot of people who believe that the five emotions are the root of all disease. And now I don't know that you could, I don't believe that anything's that simple, but I do think that the emotions are a really big part of our health that is overlooked. You know, in TCM, the five emotions are grief, and they're each connected to a different element, grief, anger, joy, fear, and worry. And, you know, the idea is not eliminating those emotions, but allowing ourselves to experience them and process them in a way that helps us move forward. You know, for instance, you know, grief, we all experience that. You know, we all have people around us who are sick or die or, you know, changes that we grieve in our lives. And the important part in Chinese medicine, like clearly we want to experience that, but we want to be able to experience in a way that allows us to process it and move through it, you know, and maybe in some circumstances too, in a way that helps us to learn and grow and acknowledge, you know, all these things. And I think the interesting thing about it is that, you know, they're not, some of these emotions have negative connotations in our society, and joy obviously has a positive connotation that, you know, we can have too much or too little of any of these. And, you know, the idea in Chinese medicine is that it does influence that internal state. It can influence the physiology. And we're kind of just starting to touch on this in Western medicine and science of really looking at how all of these things really affect us. Molecules of Emotion is actually an older book, which is a great one if you're, you know, interested not in the Chinese medicine side, but more the Western side, you know, that the emotions really, really do affect us on a physiologic level. And in Chinese medicine is, you know, kind of finding that balance and similar to the yoga practice is being introspective, is noticing, not necessarily having to change them. It's not pushing them away or shoving them down, but allowing ourselves to experience them in a way, obviously, that's not harmful to others. Of course, something like anger, you know, you want to be able to experience that and let it go in a way, of course, that's nonviolent to others. And you know, like worry, if you've had children, you know, I haven't inherited children, and I can even imagine, like, there's this there's this worry that is smart, even in our own lives. If you don't have children, there's a worry that keeps us safe and a fear that keeps us safe. And then there's a worry that becomes rumination that can really wear us down mentally, physically, and fear too. So there's a healthy balance of all of these that I think is a really great entry point too, because it really is a self-study. It's our emotional intelligence, our ability to really be conscious of what's actually happening, and not have to push it away.
Yes. The comment about ruminating on fear, I'm very familiar with that now. Right. Harvey is 7 months old. And sometimes I'll just find myself worried because he's in the same room where there are sharp things. Like, he's not near them. I'm not holding them, but just their presence is upsetting to me. And so it has become a practice to say, to myself from the inside, that's,
I totally get it. I mean, I can, I,